Welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, March 9th, 2009. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Last Saturday's New York Times reported that Facebook has over 175 million users. My guess is that there are thousands more today. Business reports also indicate that the popular Etsy.com website, where anyone can sell handmade products in exchange for a commission, raised $25 million just 1 year after it started, when it showed revenues of $1.75 million. And the list of profitable social networking communities continues to grow. What is behind this revolution, and how can we all enjoy a piece of the financial pie as indie business owners? Well, our guest today will answer some of these questions. He is David Silver, the author of The Social Network Business Plan, 18 Strategies That Will Create Great Wealth. David has been called, I'm going to read this from the back of his book because this is great, he has been called the Pied Piper of social networks, having funded more than a dozen of them, including OneSite.com, iBoats.com, and CollarFree.com. He has also consulted for several social networking communities. And before he became involved in the social networking revolution, he has had a vast wealth of experience as an investor in numerous companies over the years. David Silver, welcome to Indie Business Radio.
Thank you, Donna Marie.
So, David, let's just start really broadly here and talk about, you know, how social networks came to be. One of the interesting stories in your book sort of recounts the old sort of hunter-gatherer theme that was, of course, prominent back in the days when we were all hunting and gathering.
Right.
Something that I thought was really significant by way of analogy, and that was what the women were doing while the men were out hunting and gathering. Tell us about that and how it fits into our discussion.
Well, I was trying to compare the what I think is going to be the greatest change in business models of developed countries, from the antelope hunt to the social network bringing customers to vendors. And the antelope hunt goes back to primitive times, like you mentioned, where the men were out, you know, hunting for an antelope and searching and searching and then throwing their spears and bringing it back, and the women would skin it and use the skin for clothing of the tent and then eat the rest, and the men would go back out. And that's really how business is done today. Procter & Gamble spends a fortune, you know, for us to become aware of its disposable diaper called Pampers, and then it pays the stores for shelf alignment so that it's eye level, the Pampers are eye level, and the competitive products are lower or harder to see as we push our carts by. And it has salesmen who stock, you know, make sure it's eye level, and it has PR, and it has lawyers and so forth who protect the brand. Well, in the future, what's going to happen is the emergence of rate, for simplicity, the recommender social networks, but the long word would be rate, review, and recommend, and the wisdom of crowds will prevail. Members will trust members. They will not trust advertising. They will trust members' opinions on what to buy, and that's what we will buy, and God help the ones that aren't recommended, because they'll fall and their sales will fall, and the ones that are recommended, their sales will rise. That's the revolution I see. And what your question is, what were the women doing back when the men were hunting? They were inventing wheat. They were inventing, and all the products that came from wheat, I talk about in the book, because bakers were brilliant. They worked bread into religious ceremonies. Jews bless the bread before they eat it, for instance,
mm-hmm.
And bread was traded with the Greeks, who didn't have farms. They fished for their wealth and their prosperity, and it became currency. And even to this day, we sometimes say bread for money.
Right. And you talk about that wheat growing community, kind of being the analogy of the social networking communities of today.
Right, because of the ubiquity of wheat and the ubiquity of the Internet. When you have something that's free, and the Internet is essentially free, I mean, we pay for broadband service, but it's nothing. compared to its value. When you have a ubiquitous source or supply, then anybody can enter. So just by, you know, thinking you can create a social network and keep the competition out is silly. It's a silly thought.
Right.
But, and that's why I got into how to build all these revenue channels that make enable you with your social network to grow faster and block the competition with your elbows.
Right. So when we talk about social networks today, is it almost like a bunch of little mini internets sort of springing up all over the place that sort of deal with one particular idea or one particular type of person with a shared passion with other people?
It's a shared passion thing. We're sort of built. The need to collaborate is built into us, particularly in America. Americans love to collaborate and cooperate. I mean, God, how many associations are there? You know,
right.
From the PTA to the IEEE for engineers to ARP to Neighborhood Watch. I mean, Girl Scouts. We have a book here with 5,000 associations in them. So that's how. We love to join. We need to collaborate. And studies have shown that people trust non-experts more than they trust experts. And where do they find the non-experts? They go to the web. And I think 70% of people over 45 use the web to get an opinion from someone like themselves.
So it's almost like people haven't changed. We've always trusted each other more than we've trusted, for example, the big companies, but we've never had as much access to each other as we do today through social networking. Is that a fair summary?
Well, before interstates and, you know, cheap transportation, we had our communities, and we would get together on the back porch and work things out. But our worlds were very small. You know, they revolved around our neighborhoods and our communities, and we walked to school and Dad took the bus to work and all of that. But when families no longer built 20-room homes because people moved, you know, well, look at Intel. The founders came from Iowa and Hungary. I mean,
they went
to a warmer place called California, and they started Intel.
When we talk about social networks like Facebook and MySpace and YouTube, I mean, everybody pretty much knows what they are, and even if we don't participate on them, we certainly have visited them before, and we pretty much know what we can get there, or we have numerous friends who participate there. But outside of those main social networks, David, a lot of people are still a little bit mystified about what a social network is. Can you describe what your background brings you to conclude, like a nice overview that we can look at for what a social network is? I know your book talks about it in terms of a recommender community.
Mm-hmm. But they're not all recommender communities.
Okay, I mean, so there's no real neat box that we can tie this up and put it in.
Yeah, you can.
The
social network that's going to create great wealth for the founder is one that has the following initial characteristics. And there are three of them. One is that the potential members or those who need to join are remote. They're isolated. Number two, the issue is complex. And number three, there's some form of regulation or a wall to climb or some sort of barrier to get around in order, and the barrier changes a lot, like taxation or regulation or laws, so that it's frustrating to the members of the community and adds to the complexity. So the big three are isolation of the parties, mm-hmm. complexity of the issue, and regulation helps, but it's not critical. So one that I'm helping to start right now is pensiongovernance.com for pension fund managers. There's 5,500 of them, pension funds, that is. That's municipal and corporate. In the U.S., they manage $23 trillion, and you want to talk about a complex issue. You know, say it in one sentence, where in the heck am I going to put this money that keeps coming in every payday?
Well, now, let me ask you this about that, because that's interesting. You said the regulation is not as essential for success as the remoteness of the people, and I would guess that in terms of remoteness, pretty much we can always get that, right? Because if you want to attract people all around the world, you're always going to have an element of remoteness in it. So
True. In
terms of complex issues, do they really have to be complex, or can they just be issues that certain types of people gravitate towards?
No, they should be complex. They should be complex to make you the most money. I mean, complexity means insolubility. Solubility means I'm going to stay at the community to get it solved and then go away. So the one you should pick is the one that's insoluble.
So how is something like Facebook so successful when there really isn't that element of complexity there?
They don't even have a business model. That's not. All they are is an aggregator of a huge number of people. They don't have a business model. The ones that I'm interested in backing and putting our angel group's money into have a business plan, have an actual business plan. And advertising is, I abhor advertising.
Advertising because, is not a business plan.
No, I abhor it. I'm intolerant of it because at the forums, the forum is the key place in the social network where people tell their truth,
mm-hmm.
their truths. And if you go to the healthcare social networks, the truths that they tell are very personal.
Right.
So
right.
You can't have ads hanging up on the wall saying, you know, buy a Ford car or try a Cuisinart coffee maker.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that because advertising is persuasion. It's not truth. So the 18 revenue channels I've come up with, none of them involve advertising.
Well, that's really interesting because it shows a couple of things, not the least of which, at least to me, is that the Internet is changing so quickly. I mean, just not too many years ago, maybe not in your opinion, but certainly in other investors' opinion, advertising seemed to be, you know, a great business model for a short period of time there.
Yep.
So,
well,
Dave, let's talk a little bit.
Advertising agents are brilliant. They pushed it. But, I mean, if you go to conferences on social networks, you'll hear the people stand up who run social networks and say, we're losing our advertisers because nobody looks at the ads.
Right, exactly. That's such a good point. So, mm-hmm. So David, while the people participating at the social networks are the ones creating the content, and we have all, of course, watched closely, at least I have, and you probably have as well, what happened with Facebook over the past month or so with respect to changing their terms of service about who owns the content. So we're going to take a short break.
Mm-hmm.
And David, when we come back, I want to ask you for your opinion about that, because all of my listeners pretty much are on Facebook. We all participate in Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we all want to make the most of social networks, whether we own them or we participate in them. So we want to talk about this important issue when we come back from our first break with David Silver, author of The Social Network Business Plan. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Hi, welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we're talking today with David Silver, the author of The Social Network Business Plan, 18 Strategies That Will Create Great Wealth. And before we took our first break, we were talking about what happened with Facebook over the past month or so. Of course, all social networks have some sort of policies or terms of service. And one of the biggest issues is revolves around who owns the content that is placed at the social network. So, David, tell us a little bit of your impression of what's happening with Facebook and what social networks need to be aware of, as well as social network participants need to be aware of when it comes to the content at their site.
I do an entire chapter in my book, The Social Network Business Plan, on cutting the members in on this enormous wealth that's going to be transferred from the Procter & Gambles of the world to the owners of social networks when social networks start taking over more and more of the responsibility of product creation. Now, here's the problem. If you have more than 600 members and you want to give them all stock, you would automatically be a publicly traded company.
Right.
Because the definition of a publicly traded company, among other definitions, is 600 stockholders or more. So you don't want to give them stock because then they would be, without registering as a publicly traded company, you know, you'd be in just enormous hot water. So what you want to do, and Bebo, by the way, when it sold to, this is a UK social network similar to MySpace, when it was sold to AOL for $800 million, the members sued Bebo and didn't get anywhere. So there was some upsetness that the founders were making all the money and the people who did the heavy lifting weren't. So my solution is to sprinkle the money around.
So let's talk about that then. Well, let's go back to Facebook for a second, too, if you don't mind, because we have a question from our chat room here from someone who posts her Twitter feed through to her Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And so this issue can be enormously complicated, right? You may belong to Twitter and post everything through to Facebook. Maybe you put things at Facebook and some things you don't let through from Twitter to Facebook. So when you're participating at one of these websites and it doesn't seem as though it's really clear who owns what it is you're doing, who owns that beautiful picture of the Statue of Liberty that you took on your vacation? I mean, how do users deal with this issue if all of the control is in the hands of the large social network company?
Well, the owners of the social network, the founders, the entrepreneurial team that founded it, is going to have to cut these people in with some of the wealth, because the wealth is enormous. I mean, Penguin sold for $400 million.
Well, and it's not only the wealth. I mean, if you look at Facebook, they do have ads. I'm assuming they're making some money on that. But
a little bit.
To me, that the biggest piece of the pie comes from, as your book describes it, it's not a direct quote, but essentially taking the data and selling it anonymously to larger companies that can use it to build their businesses.
Exactly. That is a primary emerging revenue channel, is to, with the permission of the members, sell their conversations anonymously to vendors who want to know what they're thinking about their product.
That is absolutely fascinating to me, because as a user of social networks, and I have a social network of my own, and it's totally unrelated to what we're describing here, but as a user, because I don't take my users' content and do anything with it other than share it with each other so that we can all be successful in business. But
yeah,
all of my social network site users are users of these sites. And so I guess my question is this, and I want to talk about actually being able to have a small, profitable social networking site. But first, just in terms of the content that's there, is this an issue that,
mm-hmm.
You know, we all have a right to go to the world and ask them what they're doing with our content?
Well, Donna Maria, none of us read terms and conditions. As soon as we start reading the terms and conditions, we'll do a lot better. The idea that you put up on Facebook is your thought or idea.
Right.
Unless the terms and conditions say it belongs to Facebook.
Say something differently, right. And
yeah,
I guess the challenge comes in when the terms and conditions are not 100% clear and they're written for lawyers. And I guess that's your issue.
You're right.
And we can talk about here. But I want my listeners to be aware of that, because I think as small businesses, as indie business owners, and as individual producers of this content, we often undervalue our contribution to the universe, for lack of a better term, by the sharing of the information and the knowledge that we bring to the party.
You're absolutely right. We're coming through a period where greed, intense greed, in a certain segment, you know, mortgages and Wall Street, has wrecked the world's economy. So it'd be a good time for everybody to step back and think about sharing wealth a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes primarily for this new emerging money machine called the social network, where fortunes are going to be made. Do you know what these things sell for? They sell for 20 times trailing revenue. No industry has ever sold its businesses for 20 times trailing revenue. So if you get your social network up to $3 million, you're looking at a $60 million company.
That's absolutely staggering.
And if you and you can get them up to that level with only $200,000 or $300,000 of family, friends, and angel capital, and the rest comes from all these revenue channels that I discovered that bring in the cash so that you don't have to raise a venture round, which would squash you as the entrepreneur from 80% down to 40%. So with that kind of wealth, I mean, Club Penguin sold for $400 million. Its members were nine-year-olds. How do you benefit them? Well, they didn't ask because they're 9 years old.
when you talk, David, about sharing this kind of wealth, can you provide an example, like a basic example, of how that might happen with a social network? How do the individual users get in on that action?
As I said, they can't own stock because the company would be immediately public, and all of its wealth would be used in printing annual and quarterly reports and hiring lawyers and accountants. And I mean, what if you had 350,000 members, all of them were suddenly stockholders, and you had, I didn't mean 350 million, 350,000 members, you know, the printing alone and the reporting and everything would kill you and time, and it would be just a very sad place. So my thought was to, and I say this in the book, is to give everybody a locker, reward them for their contributions with tip jars, let everybody pay, even the owners pay a tip jar for a great story about losing weight or becoming more beautiful or having better sex or saving more money or all the, you know, the big five things, the big five things in life, being prettier, being wealthier, leaving more for the grandkids, being thinner and having more money, or did I repeat myself? Oh, sex, having better sex. Those are the big five topics, and they're complex and insoluble. And some of them have regulation, but it's just, but you've got to start pouring money into the lockers of the members, and I think it should be done with synthetic currency. That is, that either can be spent in the social network store or converted to cash by the social network so that that member gets real money for a variety of things, bringing in other members, adding extreme amount of value to the forum, keeping out defectors, which are wolves in sheep's clothing,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, really represent the product manufacturers and shouldn't be in the forum, finding, taking it abroad to a foreign country, helping convert it to a foreign language, being a good monitor, keeping the conversation going. All these things should be paid for in some sort of synthetic currency, but convertible into real, you know, U.S. money.
And does this assume, does that basic model assume, David, that the owner of the social network is actually monetizing that content in various different undefined ways?
Yeah, it makes that assumption. But anonymizing the conversations of the members and selling them to vendors, doesn't work in every social network. We're starting one for managers of fossil fuel plants,
mm-hmm.
nuclear, coal, oil, and so forth. And there's nobody to sell those conversations to. I mean, those are the plant managers.
Right, and I do think it's important to make that distinction because there are a lot of social networks that I participate in, for example, that don't use that sort of monetization strategy where, of course, I guess there's always the issue of who owns the content that I personally put there,
uh-huh.
but I don't have to worry about of course, I guess a tip jar would be nice, but I don't have to worry about whether I need to give permission for things being used for someone else to make $1 million while Mike is about $1,000.
Yeah.
Which is so that's very interesting, and I encourage all my listeners who are interested in starting a business with this kind of business model, please take a look at David's book, The Social Network Business Plan. It is a fantastic overview of how you can go about doing that. We are literally just scratching the surface here on Indie Business Radio today. So I want to make sure I'm checking the chat room here to make sure that people don't have, I've got some questions coming in here. John Crispin wants to know what's the difference between moderators and salespeople and managers on some of these websites.
Oh, well, in the forum, there are no salespeople. There can't be salespeople. The forum is pure. That's where people speak their truths. If you go to histersisters.com, that's H-Y-S-T-E-R-S,
right.
I talk about in the book for people either going through, women going through the process of a hysterectomy or staying on afterward to help others going through it to discuss hormone issues.
Right.
And it's quite a big site, and Kathy Kelly, the founder, by the way, she started with no money. She's
right.
done it all with the fumes off a turpentine rag. Never taken in outside capital. Started as a school teacher. Has 3 employees and 30 monitors. The monitors are volunteers, and their job is to keep out defectors.
Right.
And
right.
defectors represent product companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are no salespeople. There are monitors, and as for moderators, I don't even know the word. I don't know what they're moderating. So, John, I can't answer John's question on that one.
Well, it's really interesting. I'm taking a look at Hister Sisters right now, which is you know, it's a simple website. It's got a lot of information here, and it's compartmentalized in a way that's easy to follow. And you scroll down to the bottom, you will see, guess what, ads.
Yeah, a few ads.
Right, right. So this is great. So a lot of times what we can do if you're interested in this kind of business model, in addition to getting David's book, is take a look at some of these websites. And, I mean, David, for all practical purposes, the business plan is visible from looking at the website.
you're right, Donna Maria. Another good one is patientslikeme.com.
Okay, great. Patientslikeme.com. We're going to come back and take a look at that, because what made you chuckle there, I think, is, so
you're
interesting
right.
that
you're right.
essentially everything is so transparent. You can spend enough time there, you can figure out how to do it yourself.
Exactly.
We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more with David Silver, author of The Social Network Business Plan. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how social network members can, who are small business owners, David, that's who our listeners are today, how we can actually go and join certain social networks that we feel like our customers are populated at, and how we can make the most of those social networks as indie business owners. We'll be right back with David Silver. Don't touch that mouse.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here with David Silver, author of The Social Network Business Plan, 18 Strategies That Will Create Great Wealth. We have a question from the chat room. Where can we go to get David's book? And David suggests, how simple is this? Go to Amazon.com and click on books and type in The Social Network Business Plan, and it's theirs. It's yours for the buying. Right, David? And I'm going to go leave a comment there, because this is a very interesting book. So for this section of the show, David, what I'd like to focus on is empowering social network site users. And in the case here, we're talking about indie business owners, small business owners,
yep.
empowering them to make the most of the social networks they belong to. Again, you said advertising is dead. You know, walking around blaring with a big megaphone, I sell this, you need to buy it, is not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
What are some tips that you can offer based on your vast experience to help indie business owners maximize these kinds of sites?
Let's say you are a violin teacher. Let's say you're a violin teacher. Or let's say you're a teacher of anything, accounting or anything. You could go to some web, you could go to some communities and say, "Permit? Would you permit me to put a checkbox on your homepage?" And I will ask people a series of questions. Do they want to learn higher education? Do they want to learn a musical instrument?
Mm-hmm.
Do they feel the possibility of being in foreclosure, going into foreclosure? That's if you're a mortgage advisor. And if they check the box, you pay for that name. This is the old rent a mailing list business. Remember from the pre-internet days, or maybe you're too young, but you would rent a list of people who subscribe to a certain magazine because you were launching a product in that field. Like fishing rods, you would pay for new subscribers to Outdoor Life.
Hey, David, your answer to that question, and I don't want to interrupt you, but this is really important. Your answer to that question indicates that we have to be creative. You just said, go to the site owner and ask them to do blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 yeah.
You didn't say, look at the site and see where you can put your this, or see where you can do that. And obviously there's obvious room for that, because that's what the sites are designed
mm-hmm.
for. But
mm-hmm.
you're saying, you know, you got to figure out what your goals are and then
yep.
think outside that box.
Yeah, let me be very specific. There's a website called whois.sc. That tells you the owner of the website, his address or her address, and the year it was formed. Whois.sc.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a website called, I don't know, Apple Lovers or Apple Juice Lovers or whatever.
Okay.
And you want to market something to people who love apples and apple juice and whatever. And let's say it's an Australian apple. You have a website. You don't want to introduce an Australian apple to America. Well, you would contact that person by going to whois.sc, find their name, and then just about, you know, so many people on Gmail, you can, let's say the name is Tom Rohm,
mm-hmm.
R-O-H-M, formed that website in 2005,
right.
And you would try tomrohm@gmail.com, tom.rohm@gmail.com, T-Rohm, and Tom R. And eventually you'd hit him. And if you don't, you'll see the mailing address at the snail mailing address at whois.sc, and you say, look, I'll share some money with you. Loan me your list. Let me put a checkbox on your homepage. And when I get click-throughs, and if they sign up for what I'm doing and pay me a dollar, I'll give you 50 cents.
Okay.
What's simpler than that?
That is very simple. And the ideas are endless. And for the most part, anybody who owns a social network will probably be open to something like
mm.
that. It's a simple revenue sharing model that they really don't have to do a lot of work to participate in.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you one more. So it's fast, and this is getting money from from corporations who like to see their name on homepages with a click-through to their homepage. This is selling powered by links to your homepage.
And how is that different from advertising?
Well, you know, it's a shade different. Do you listen to NPR?
Of course.
They call those sponsorships.
Right.
See? And you go to people like Coca-Cola and Nike. They're kind of agnostic. They just want their name around. If they'll pay like $60,000 for a three-year right to have their name and their link on your homepage.
Right. It's like stadium naming rights.
Yeah, very much.
So that's another thought. Regardless of the size of your social network, you can certainly find companies that would be willing to do that. Now, once you're inside, let's say you have a social network, just like mine, for example. All of the people there are interested in natural, organic beauty products.
And uh-huh.
beauty was one of the hot issues. So
beauty is hot.
Start with that. So my members manufacture these products,
mm-hmm.
And hundreds and hopefully soon even thousands, because we have about 1,600 people at the site now, come to the website, and there, some of them are manufacturers, but a lot of them are interested in connecting with people that can help them be more beautiful, buying
mm-hmm.
their products, learning about the ingredients they use in their cosmetics and things like that. What can some of the manufacturer members that I have do to make the most of a website like this? Just some ideas to get the creative juices flowing.
What can the members of a health and beauty website do?
The cosmetic companies, right, do to connect with the people that come to the website that say, I'm interested in natural and organic beauty products.
Oh, I would say if I were not so beautiful and, you know, therefore had to come to the site, I would do the following. I would, on the forum, I would say, hey everybody, who wants, you know, I live in, Kentucky, and, you know, I know you guys are all over the planet, but look, let's form a branding group where we offer our services to the health and beauty aid manufacturers of the world, of which there are thousands, like Estee Lauder, et cetera. Let's offer our services as a market research group to brand or to comment on their new brands for a fee, and let's share, you know, the money with the owner of the social network and ourselves.
Okay.
Now, branding is going for, $50,000 to $60,000 a pop.
Right.
On current health and beauty aid communities that I'm aware of.
So maybe in the sense that we're talking about here, because the members that I serve are actually small cosmetics manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they could get together with some of the other members at the website that don't make products and perform some the sort of branding exercise that you just described.
Yeah, or you could do a rate, review, and recommend activity on your community in which, let's say, this Kentucky person I talked about submits their cosmetic, mails out a sample to 25 people, you know, snail mails it.
Right.
They test it and write reviews.
Right.
And then somebody from Indiana does theirs, and somebody, you know, in the same general category, let's say, of blush.
Right.
I know one word, okay? everybody, you know, then votes on the best blush, and then you put up, like, a box score. The winner of blush for March 2009 was Helen Smith from Waukegan, Illinois.
Oh, what a fun idea. That's a great idea. I like
that
idea.
You can pay her in synthetic currency into her locker.
Right, and that's something, again, that people can do at any network that they're participating in.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm really big on rate, review, and recommend. I mean, Colorfree, one of the ones we helped start, is for people who desperately want to be apparel designers. You know, they love to design clothes, but there's just not enough seats at Chanel and Versace and Ralph Lauren for all these thousands of people who want to do that. So Colorfree and Threadless does the same thing. Threadless is a wonderful community.
Yes, it is.
And they submitted, at Colorfree, they submit a design each month, and the members, I think there's 25, they got up to 25,000 members who want to wear the latest, hottest, greatest thing. They vote, the winner is named, Colorfree then makes 1,000 units for about $5,000 or $6,000 a pop and sells it to the community to members of the community for $25,000 a pop, and then that leaves a profit of $19, which is shared between Colorfree and the winning designer. And if there's leftover inventory, it's sold to boutiques in San Diego.
So if you're on a budget, David, let's just say I love the idea about the contest, because you
mm-hmm.
can do that with 25 samples of products and whatever you need to pay the Postal Service to send
mm-hmm.
it out.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner of the site can obviously set up all the voting mechanisms and everything, so you don't have to be worried about that. That's a fantastic idea. But let's think about actual ways to do it when it's totally free. And does that really boil down to engagement of people at the website?
Mm-hmm. It sure does.
So writing articles about your area of expertise that support your product, that direct people to your products to see how, you know, to basically, they interact with each other.
Yeah. And if the person wants to make money to produce these 25 units and sell, send them around,
yeah,
it's possible to make some money on the at the community through the tip jar mechanism. She has to write good stories about how people have used her product and how it's changed their life or got them a job the day they put on, you know, this kind of makeup or changed their lipstick or whatever. And, you know, the tip jar thing is far more useful than people think. I learned about it at Oh My News, OHMYNEWS.com.
Right.
Which is journalism, people journalism. And it's one of the things that's causing print journalism to fail, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I learned about it at Mobile Industry Network, for mobile phone users and makers, where they come together and talk about mobile phones. But if you encourage people journalism and encourage people to pay for the good stories, that's one way this person could make enough money to ship 25 units around.
Well, that's an interesting thought. So you're saying the site owner would basically pay for the content and would evaluate it based on its usefulness to the community?
No, I'm saying the person, this person I invented, Helen Smith in Waukegan, who won the contest, let's say she doesn't have the money to send 25 units around, but she could earn money by through the tip jar mechanism on your community.
Right, right. I think we're saying the same.
We say the same thing, okay.
Not using the most eloquent terms.
Yeah, you are. You're good.
But that does make some sense. And so that's two really, well, actually more than two really great ideas. One is use some sort of survey mechanism to get feedback for your products. Create valuable content that the site owner is willing to pay you for in some form, whether it's synthetic currency, as you call it, or not. And then also simply put content at the website that leads readers back to your website, back to your blog, or whatever.
Yeah, and in the book I talk about the old infomercial. Do you remember those, Donna Maria?
I see them every now and then when I came.
I know, we see them still, like Gallo Wine, you know. Come, you know, a visit to a wine, to a vineyard is often on the late news. Well, local TV show stations don't have enough news, you know. So between weather and sports, there's this blank space where they start to talk slowly and tease each other and whatnot. They'll often put, they would love to put up a story about a community that just voted on a terrific new cosmetic. And that would lead to sales for Helen in Indiana, whose cosmetic, whatever it was voted best that month. And who would pay for that infomercial? Those three people with the Powered By links on the homepage, because their name would stay on the TV set for 5 minutes.
So here's what I'm taking away from this. My brain is taking a whole lot away from this. But you know, one of the upshots that's so important, I think, for our listeners to grasp and really embrace is the power of the information that they have to share, and the profit and the potential profitability of that information. Because what you're describing is using it to generate income in two ways. Number one, by actually physically getting paid for the content, and number two, by having people look to you as the expert in that area and therefore easily tie the bow on a product sale as a result.
Yes, ma'am. You nailed it.
So anybody out there who's not considering writing for your local newspaper or a blog, or someone else's blog as a guest blog or whatever, even if you don't get paid, particularly if you get a website link, right, because it's like a breadcrumb that leads back to you.
That's right.
So you've got to start doing this. This is absolutely fascinating. So
we have to think about the old stuff. Like, let me just digress one quickie. Weight Watchers International was started without any money by Gene Nedich, who I interviewed back in the day, on the simple concept that people who are overweight would pay to come to a hotel conference room. Back then it was $2, now it's $12, for the privilege of standing up and telling the other people in the room why they got fat. And,
that certainly boils that down to a science, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then she would have a table in the back, where she would sell some products if they wanted to buy them on the way out, which led to a product line called Weight Watchers International. When she sold that company to Heinz, it had a recognition factor of 91%. 9 out of 10 people knew what it stood for. in hindsight, a recognition that it made catch-up of only 19%. That's the power of entrepreneurship, using a simple concept that people would love to discuss their issues with other people suffering from the same issues.
Well, these are some great ideas. And, you know, of course, Weight Watchers is huge right now, but there was a time, as you said, when it really wasn't. So the idea that we can all today visit anyone's website, and if we spend enough time there, we can essentially see exactly how they do business. And we can duplicate those models in some of our own spheres of expertise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, we can not only do that, but we can head over to Amazon and get the social network business plan. Because even if you don't plan on owning a social network, there is a ton of information in here. If you own a website or a blog, right, David, you essentially have a social network. Because if you accept comments from the public on your blog, that's a social network. I mean, it's not the kind we're talking about. Certainly, pardon me?
It's expandable into a social. You need more windows. You need a forum and a payment window and an expert window and a locker.
But in a small way, if you have socializing going on, comment section. I mean, I visit some websites. Somebody will put up a blog, and 2 days later, there's, 150 comments there.
Yeah, but you said you spent a few minutes on Hister Sisters a few minutes ago.
Yes, I did.
You noticed she had a little product section where she had little loyalty bracelets and things like that?
That's right. That's another good idea.
Mm-hmm. That's
exactly.
Profit-making
thing. Wonderful, David. You have shared so many thoughts and insights. I encourage you to get the Social Network Business Plan on Amazon. And, David, can you tell us where your website is in case we want to learn more about you before we close?
Oh, yeah. If somebody is actually thinking of a business plan that they want my angel group to look at, it's SF, like Santa Fe, where I live, Santa Fe, sfcapital.com. And my email is dsilver@sfcapital.com. And I would love to discuss ideas for your early stage ideas for a social network, because we're just in the kindergarten.
Right.
It's about a 2-year run here, and then the next wave will come through.
We're all in kindergarten where social networks are concerned. Thank you so much,
thank
David.
Thank you, Donna Maria. Appreciate it.
Today. The chat room has just been alive with activity. I'm glad you joined us. I'll be back next week for another edition of Indie Business Radio. I'll see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.